Welcome to the Interviews Podcast. Welcome, Interisti, to episode 104 of the Interviews Podcast, the official podcast of SempreInter.com. We are here for the post-match reaction of Empoli-Inter, which finishes 3-0 to the visitors. Goals from Fratesi in the 50th, Fratesi again in the 67th, and Lautaro Martinez rounding it off in the 79th minute. As always, I'm one half of your co-hosting duo, Alessandro Raffa, joined here by Gianni Paterno. Gianni, Napoli picked up the 3 points against Milan. We saw what Juventus ended up doing later in the game against Parma. We have Venezia coming up before hosting Napoli at the San Siro for what looks like an early title, not decider, but a clash between what's expected to be the two teams challenging for the Scudetto at this point. A couple of teams have dropped off. Given not necessarily the struggles, because obviously Inter has won 6 out of their last, you know, 7 matches, but given the performance against Juventus, where we blew the lead there, not looking our best against Roma and so forth, how important was this 3 points against a team that I think has surprised a lot of folks with their play this year in Empoli?
Super important to get all 3 points against Empoli. I think especially for a confidence standpoint for the guys, I'm sure that they were feeling a little down after the Juve game, rightfully so. That was a very disappointing match for a lot of people. So to be able to rebound, and even with the squad rotation, once again, we saw how it was, to be able to get all 3 points was huge for them. And I think it kind of relieved a little bit of the pressure that might have been building. I don't think there was really a lot of internal pressure, but externally, I'm sure, from the fans and stuff like that, and even the newspapers. You didn't want the rumblings to start and for that to happen. So, yeah, I think it was a huge 3 points.
You know what I think has been an underrated aspect of this that people aren't really talking about because of the disappointment with the 1 point against Juve at home is that these points are getting picked up with the spine of our team in Çalhanoğlu and Acerbi still not back from injury. And we've seen, Zielinski get tried out in the role. Obviously, Aslani has been working through an injury that he picked up. Barella stepping in at Regista, and then Stefan De Vrij, which, he seems to be on a downward trajectory as far as the fan sentiment is concerned. Important to pick up points, especially when you don't have your top line starters. Everyone talks about depth and the importance of depth. It seems like Interisti aren't too happy with the people that have been stepping into these roles. But 3 points is 3 points. Ultimately, Inter did play this match with 11 against 10 for the majority of it. So it was an interesting. An interesting performance from Inter where the first half, and we'll do a very quick recap. First half was really, really lethargic from the boys. The tempo and pace of our in possession play was just really slow against a team that was obviously, backing off of us and willing to put a lot of men behind the ball. It looked like we were going to have some trouble actually breaking through. Breaking through their lines there. It looked like it was going to be a cross and inshallah night, as Inter are pretty familiar with over the last several years. But ultimately, the boys are able to get it done. Again, that first half, pretty lethargic until the red card, which is no arguments for that red being shown. It was a high challenge into Thuram that could have seriously injured him. Darmian gets in, puts the ball away, but it ends up being a ball that touched his hand, I think, a few times on the way on his way into the box. We go into the second half, obviously needing to pick up our tempo, and we do so. Fratesi gets on the score sheet. Bastoni plays a beautiful ball to the back post that looks like it almost went over the line, but Darmian gets to there to head back to Fratesi in the box. He hits it, which takes a slight deflection over Vasquez for Empoli, who has been a really good goalkeeper this year. He actually had a tremendous save in the first half off of a Bastoni header from a corner. Yeah, good to get that first one. That was crazy.
Yeah.
That was a mental save.
I didn't think we were going to score after that save, to be honest. I was like, oh boy, it's going to be one of those games where the keeper plays out of his mind. But
the keeper has the best night of his career against Inter, which is a game that we've seen play out several times. So Fratesi, once again, on the score sheet, he ends up doubling it. A beautiful ball played in by Barella to Lautaro, who has the wherewithal to just lay it off one time, back heel touch into Fratesi. Beautiful finish to Vasquez's right. Perfect finish into the bottom corner. Inter takes a 2-0 lead. And then, you know, I don't know whether it was Empoli's spirit breaking or whether it's just is just exhausting to defend against that for that long. But we were just having fun to end that game, creating a lot of opportunities, just looking very fluid. Again, it was against 10 men, but looking extremely fluid until Barella had a layoff to Lautaro, who puts it away for the 3-0, a goal that he was extremely excited to get out of the way, which is, it's just good to see. So Inter takes home the 3 points against Napoli. Obviously, you know, we talked about what's upcoming for us. This is a stretch of 7 games in 20 days that we're now a few games into. And Inter keeps racking up the points. We have not lost since the derby loss against Milan, you know, several weeks ago. So, all right, let's talk a little bit about, you know, some of the storylines from this game. Fratesi. I think especially for you, I want to ask you this, like, where are you at with Fratesi at this point? Because throughout the entirety of our interviews podcast career, he's been very polarizing for both of us in the fact that the goal contributions are there and the performances have not necessarily been. He's gotten an extended look in this team with the injury to Barella and obviously now with Hakan going down and the reshuffling in the midfield. He's been playing a lot recently. I just got to ask you, like, where do you stand with Davide now?
Look, a lot of my agenda against Fratesi is more so trolling than anything. You know, it's no secret that I wanted Samardžić, and every time Fratesi has a little bit of a bad moment or makes a mistake, I'm gonna point it out because, you know, I wanna remind the people where my heart was in that. But listen, the guy does show up. He does score massive goals for us. All kidding aside, I do wish that there were certain things that were a little bit more developed in his game as a midfielder. I still think that he would be an exceptional second striker. I don't think that he really is a true midfielder. I think that he is better up the pitch. You know, whether the manager sees it, I don't know. But you know, he's an interesting player because you just don't understand how he got placed as a midfielder when his finishing is awesome. His ability to make runs into the box is very good. He's strong at just finding those pockets of space to be able to, you know, to be able to score goals. Even his first goal, like, it just made no sense how he was able to do that and get that shot off and put it in. But at the end of the day, 2 goals, awesome. I'm happy. Even though now I don't know if you've been on Twitter today, but 2 of his biggest fans are throwing him under the bus, calling him a monkey.
Which 2 fans are that?
You know. Victor and
are we not gonna name it?
And Tony, you know, they unfortunately, you know, one said he's, you know, he's an ape, and the other one said, you know, unfortunately Tony admitted he lost a bet to me, so he had to say those things. But yeah, it was very interesting, to say the least, his performance. And listen, if he's gonna keep doing this kind of stuff where he pops in, scores a couple goals, doesn't do much in the midfield, but he's able to contribute in the score sheet, and we come away with 3 points. Who am I to complain, right?
Yeah, a few things with that. So first, like, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's apt to make the comparison to Samardžić because it is important to understand, like, with Fratesi on the pitch, it's never going to look as good as it does with Samardžić on the pitch. When he has the ball, the things that he's able to do, it's never going to look as good. But then if you look at this at the, you know, goal contributions at the end of the day, it's really never going to be that far off. Fratesi gets his goals in ways that Samardzic doesn't. Samardzic gets his goals in ways that Fratesi doesn't, but the goal contributions are both there. I don't fault anyone for having a preference for Lazar, but you know, you just can't deny what Fratesi does in the limited minutes that he gets now, extended minutes that he's gotten with Inter these last several weeks. 3 goals on the season. I mean, you know, we could end up having another season of, did Fratesi actually impress you? Oh, but he also got a career high in goal contributions. So it just looks like we're trending in that direction. I also, you know, someone that comes to mind when we talk about Fratesi is, this is not because there's any similarity in play style, but I think more like a conversation around them is, you know, Pippo Inzaghi wasn't wowing anyone with his play on the field, but he was always there to score. You couldn't,
that's,
like...
That's a great comp, to be honest. Good shout.
It's just like nothing was spectacular about his game, but he just knew where to be to get the ball and score goals. And it's, you know, Fratesi has a similar thing. I'm not comparing, obviously they're two very different players, just more so the discourse about them. Let's shift it over to another topic of conversation, and we'll do a seamless transition here. 2 goals from Fratesi, but it couldn't look more different than the performance that we saw out of Barella. As far as like completeness as a midfielder, that was something. That second half was really, really, really special. What did you like out of the vice capitano for Inter in this match against Empoli?
Is it crazy to say that he's the best midfielder in the world?
I don't think it's crazy.
Like, are we now at a point where we could officially say that he is truly the best midfielder in the world? Like, I don't think there's nobody who does all the things that he does to the level that he does it. Nicolò Barella is. He's the guy that I do not want to lose at any cost. I don't care what offer comes in.
Yeah.
He's just so valuable. You cannot replace him. You can't. You can't do it with Zielinski. You can't do it with Fratesi, Hakan. Nobody. If he continues at this trajectory, although he's been there doing it longer than my favorite midfielder of all time, which is Wesley Schneider, I think he'll not only go down as one of the all-time Inter greats, but I think one of the all-time European greats, because he is phenomenal. Won't get to the level that our good friend Andrea Pirlo is at. You know, like, that guy was genius to the... I think he's the greatest midfielder of all time. Forget about the other two Barcelona guys. But Barella is just phenomenal. And the level at which he was completing passes, his defensive responsibility that he was able to play at with, even though, you know, he was... he doesn't do it as well as Hakan does, to an extent, but he's just, he's just unbelievable. He really is. And I want him, maybe I don't want him to get the recognition worldwide. I don't know. I don't know what I actually want, but I think he's just, I never want to lose him. That's all.
You know, we talk about best midfielder in the world. Like, can we say that? And I think a good barometer for this is, like, he doesn't have the PR, right? But if you asked any manager in world football if Barella would get into their team, there's no manager that would say no. He gets into every team in the world. I cannot think of a midfield that he doesn't get into, or that manager doesn't go out of their way to find a role for him. He's that complete.
Spot on.
There's nothing that he can't do. There's nothing that he can't do. And you know what is the most impressive thing with him? And this is something that he's added to his game. His decision-making has been so, so good. When there is the moment to slow it down and play just the 5-yard pass on the sideline, he does that. When there's the moment to, like on Inter's second goal, to hit that, you know, penetrating ball right into Lautaro, he knows when to pull the trigger on that. And he's selective with you know, those kind of passes. He's not just spamming balls into the box. It's very, very impressive to watch. And you also bring up, like, you know, this is the player that we would suffer from losing the most. And it is true. Because as much as, you know, we've talked about this, that when Hakan goes down, like, that's the biggest drop-off as far as Regista is concerned to Aslani. It's the biggest positional drop-off. You know, Inter doesn't survive without him. Hakan was not always a Regista. And if you gave, I fully wholeheartedly believe this, if you treated Barella the same way that Inzaghi treated Hakan and basically gave him the reins to learn the position, I truly believe he would learn that position and be one of the best in the world at it within a season's time. He's that good. He's that versatile. He's that complete. Just an incredibly impressive performance. One thing that wasn't really tested was Inter's defense, which while Empoli had 11, there were a couple breakaways. De Vrij, you know, maybe got exposed for the lack of speed a little bit on that Solbakken through ball that he put on net to Sommer. I don't know that we really, really dove into this, but I did do a little digging as far as the stats are concerned. Just looking at Inzaghi's defensive line versus the expected goals per game in each of his seasons at Inter. And in 2021-22, the defensive line was at 48, which is pretty high, and we're averaging over an expected goal a game at 1.02. He dropped the line back a little bit in his second year. It dropped below one. He dropped the line back even further in his third year. We won the Scudetto with the lowest expected goals against per game at 0.76. This year, we're playing the highest defensive line in Inzaghi's tenure, basically at the midway line at 49.8. And we're also giving up the most expected goals per game in Inzaghi's tenure. Before we head into this game against Napoli and Arsenal coming up, are you expecting not a midseason turnaround, but are you expecting Inzaghi to turn things around as far as the defense is concerned, or do you think that this is going to be a season long thing that we're dealing with?
That's a tough one. I think the optimist in me wants to say that we'll be able to get this turned around and figured out, and then be able to make a legitimate run at the Scudetto. How about you ask me that question again after we play Napoli, and I'll give you what I would think is the definitive answer by then.
It's going to be a really good test, because that is a team that, you know, if we're going to be at home, we're going to want to come out on the front foot. That's a team that can do damage on the counter. I'm really hoping Acerbi is back for that game, despite the fact that he's not that much speedier than De Vrij. I think we do see, especially this season, that Acerbi is the better choice back there for this system than De Vrij is. So we'll see how that plays out. All right, let's talk about some of these players, and then we'll get into some Q&A that you guys sent over. All right, nothing to really say about Sommer, so we can go ahead and skip his performance here. There was talk that Josep Martinez would come into the side. That noise is getting even louder now with Venezia coming up.
It's getting loud.
Let's see him. Let's see him.
What's the worst that could happen? We beat Venezia. That's what the worst thing.
They did come back to beat Udinese, but Udinese was also playing 10 men against 11. So,
also two penalties. Let's settle down.
Right. If there's a game that you're going to try it, it's probably this one. All right. Defensively, which one of these guys stood out for you? Bisek, De Vrij, Bastoni.
Ooh. I'm going to go with Bastoni. I thought he was really solid defensively. Obviously, he's still good going up forward with the ball at his feet. He just offers something that now there is a confidence for me with him, how he plays defensively. Whereas before, that was something that I was afraid of and I wasn't confident. Now, I mean, I'll say he's the best center back in the world right now, truly. Nima and Carlo were talking about Buongiorno being the best center back in Serie A right now. he was saved in that Milan game because he really had two howlers, like two big howlers, where one was ruled offside, and I forgot what happened with the other one. But, I mean, I don't know. I gun to my head, I will take Bastoni over Buongiorno in Serie A. And it's not even because he's an Inter player. I think he just offers more. Same way I feel about Barella, complete package with Buongiorno as well.
Yeah, and he also, Bastoni did have the hockey assist, the pre-assist to Darmian for the count first it. Fratesi goal as well. So count it, dangerous ball into the box. That's what you need. I'll shout
we,
out.
We track XG. Why don't we just track hockey assists?
Yeah, there is a tracking for it for Football Reference. Yeah, they call it shot creating actions. So I'll check after and see where he is in the league, but I'm sure he's going to be up there for defenders. Bissek, three roles across the back line yesterday. That was pretty cool to see him start at right center back, move over to left center back when Pavard came in, and then finish the game at center back when Palacios got his debut. Short cameo, but I mean, he was perfect as far as you know the passing is concerned. He looked like
I liked what I saw. And this gives me confidence. You know, maybe if we're, how nice would it be to see Palacios? Well, you can go Bastoni, Palacios, Bisek.
Yeah.
For the Venezia game. And then you give Martinez a start and you just see what you got. Realistically, we should not have a single problem dealing with Venezia, regardless of what 11 is out there. Let's be real. Like, I think man for man, Venezia is the worst squad in Serie A. So we should not have an issue, in my opinion. And
I don't disagree.
That's one that I say let the kids play.
If there is a team that you would experiment against, it's going to be Venezia. But you know, there also is the danger that if it doesn't go wrong, you drop points ahead of the Napoli thing. So knowing Inzaghi is probably not going to do that. But I'm really intrigued by the Bisek, Bastoni, Palacios backline. I also just quickly got a shout out Pavard. I thought he was awesome when he came into the game. Like, he looks like he's coming back on form, which, you know, you just love to see it. Question, you want to talk about Mkhitaryan?
Rather not.
Miki and Zielinski were the only other midfielders that to make appearances that we haven't spoken about yet. When Zielinski came in, that is when Barella moved back into the Mezzala, and he looked pretty good there. I don't think that there's anything really to write home about Zielinski's performance, but it was, you know, more talk about Mkhitaryan after a really slow first half. He just didn't do much. There are games from him where he's just going to be an absolute zero. I mean, we could talk about this until we're blue in the face, but if Zielinski is getting more minutes with this team, it should be a sign that you know, those minutes can come at the expense of potentially Mkhitaryan if the performances aren't there. Anything from Di Marco that stood out to you? I thought it was a very standard game from him. Nothing super special.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, like, I did like the efforts. He did one thing that did stand out, and I think we don't really talk about enough. His first touch and his ability to just trap a pass and trap a cross is so beautiful and brilliant. He had one opportunity in the first half that I forgot who played it to him. It might have been Barella, actually. But it was like a driven ball to him, and he just, with his left foot, brought it down. Right, I mean, no bounce, no nothing. It perfectly weighted and perfectly, like, I wish I had that type of touch and control. Like, I'm not even asking to have his ability to cross, but to be able to just trap a pass like that or trap a cross, it was beautiful. And I think that's one thing that goes underrated. But yeah, the rest of it was, yeah, just a pretty standard game for him.
The other wingback spot, Darmian gets the assist. He also scores a goal that ends up getting disallowed. Dumfries came in during Inter's most dominant period and, you know, continued to, I guess, keep that standard up. Arsenal, Napoli, if you have to start one versus the other for each of those games, who do you give those games to?
Oh, you go first.
Right?
I need a second to think. Oh.
Hmm. I just think the Kvaratskhelia option from the left-hand side is probably more dangerous than, what is it, Martinelli for Arsenal? I don't even
know. Is it Martinelli that starts? I mean, I know
I think it's Martinelli, Havertz, and Saka on the right wing. So cutting into, you know, cutting in onto the right foot, it's Martinelli, and I don't think that's not as dangerous to me as Kvara is.
Yeah,
although we've seen Darmian pocket Kvara, so that would be what I would do. I would give Dumfries Arsenal, and I'd give Darmian Napoli.
You know what? Yeah, once you pointed it out that way, I would 100% agree with you there. Yeah. I don't even think Martinelli is actually a Brazilian. And I also wish he would change his last name because he shouldn't be able to, you know, at least rock an Italian last name. So
it's cultural appropriation.
Yeah, I feel offended. Who do I write to? My local senator or something? But anyway.
Yeah, I think Arsene Wenger. I don't know if he's involved with Arsenal still, but maybe just shoot him an email. All right, forwards today. I thought Thuram was like immense. Even on in games that he's not on the score sheet, just his being an option as an outlet, I thought he was really, really good. Where are you with Lautaro right now? You know, he had a little streak of you thought he was coming back and then things dried up again. Now he's on the score sheet. Probably should have had one against Juventus for sure on that header that went whizzing by the 100%. Post. He had a couple.
He missed another header this game.
Yep.
Same way. So,
yep. Couple opportunities before the goal.
I'm hoping that that seventh place finish, you know, kind of lit a fire under him. Because I would say I don't think he deserved to finish seventh by any means. With the year that he had and the success that he had, and listen, I'll argue that he, if you're looking just at pure stats and trophies won, he had the best year. Best year, not even a question.
Goals, stats.
Rodri should have won it 2 years ago. Not Messi. Messi had no business winning the one 2 years ago. I'm sorry. It should have been Rodri. Then, when he got a treble, a domestic treble, or really a treble, not a domestic one, but you know what I mean. And then just everything that Lautaro did last season, all the trophies that he was able to play a massive part in winning. To not even finish top three, let alone, forget about winning it, but let alone top three, you put him seventh behind Mbappe, who had a stinker of a year for his standard, let's say. I don't understand it. And I think this is the last year that I will ever care about the Ballon d'Or, even if he goes on to win it eventually or somebody.
I'm right there with you.
Like, yeah, it's not a real
trophy.
They threw
away all their credibility.
Yeah, it's just popularity and, hey, we screwed you last year. We're going to make up for it this year kind of thing. That's kind of what I felt like they did with Rodri with this one. It doesn't matter. I don't care who wins it. I don't care. No memes, no pictures. I don't care.
Yeah, captain of his club team and a consummate professional. Most goals scored by any of these other guys, including, you know, having the trophies to back it up. So disappointing finish for him for sure, but you know, you saw the way he celebrated after he scored that goal. It obviously is a weight off of his shoulders now. Yeah, is the time
that
we spoke
was a
about
lot of
this
intensity.
Yeah, and I love that it was Barella to give it to him. I do love that it was vice captain to captain. That layoff, because Barella could have lashed it in with his left foot, and he, you know, decided to lay it off. It was like a really, actually a cool moment. So hopefully he's back. Taremi, the only other forward to make an appearance, was involved in either in that Lautaro goal with his pressing on Vasquez against Venezia. Taremi gets a start.
I don't see why not, right? Like I think that's a game where, you know, maybe throw Taremi. Heck, even throw Correa out there. You know, like, you should be able to handle them no problem. Like, I would rather preserve these guys for the bigger games that are coming up. Actually, I think after the Venezia game, it's going to be the game against Arsenal, right?
Yep, Arsenal, then Napoli. Both
at
home.
Yeah,
Taremi, both at home, and Correa. You have not done a good job of protecting San Siro against the big teams this year.
Taremi, Correa against Venezia up front.
Wow. Arnautovic is just, you're out.
Not that I don't, but like, I don't know what's going on with him. You know, I know a lot of people hate him and a lot of people are very annoyed with him and rightfully so. There's no excuse for his attitude and his lack of I don't know, focus with certain things and his little pouting. But Arnautovic could be the first striker off the bench. I mean, I'm okay with that. But I think, yeah, and anybody who knows me knows I can't stand Correa. But it's like, I would rather preserve Thuram and Lauti for Arsenal, for Napoli as much as possible. And let's really like throw all the reserves. Like, this is a game where you could play Barenbrook. I feel like, I know they're not gonna, I know they're not, but it's like, you should not have a problem handling Venezia. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. I'm really, since you brought it up, it has been playing in the back of my mind. I'm really intrigued by Bissek, Bastoni, Palacios. That feels like a Tekkers kind of defense.
As far as a press
is concerned, they beat a press easy. Like, they're not worried about getting backed up into a corner and not having a place to go. All three of those guys have good foot skills. So it's very intriguing. All right, give me a letter grade on Inzaghi for this performance, and then we'll get into the questions.
Well, real quick, I just want to say that, yeah, that's a back three that could be your back three for the next, like, 5 to 7 years if you really want to keep it together. So, yeah, I would be very intrigued to see how that looks. Now, hold on, you said give a letter grade for what now?
For Inzaghi for navigating this fixture, and then we'll get into the Q&A.
Let's go with a B+.
Yeah,
I think
he pulled the triggers on the rotation well, and he also snapped them out of the little doldrum that they were in that first half.
Agreed.
Yeah. All right. Questions from the listeners. They're kind of all over the map. We do have a voicemail that we'll play for you, but let's get into it. First question, at @m6adam_, who, thank you for being a listener. You always comment with questions, so we do really appreciate it. He asks, do you think we wasted our summer transfer window? Used all of our money for a backup goalkeeper and a young center back Inzaghi is never going to use. He did end up making an appearance at the end of that game and did speak highly of him in the post-match. But he says, we should have used that $20 million on one player and loaned a backup goalkeeper. Love the podcast, guys. All right, we're 10 games into Serie A, a few games into Europe. Where do you stand reflecting back on this summer transfer window?
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to agree with him, right? Like, we talked about it last episode, that it's like, if you weren't going to be utilizing these guys, then why not pull that money and get yourself a bona fide starting center back to be able to solidify your defense? Now, like you said, we did get to finally see Palacios, and I liked what I saw. I'm sure you did too, and you know, like you said, Inzaghi seemed to speak highly of him. So maybe we already have something there and we're starting to see a little bit of confidence and trust being built there. So maybe that'll pay off it'll be like having a nice little ace up our sleeve. So again, with the rumors with Martinez possibly starting this next game, all right, maybe now we can see. And I'm still of the belief that, like, I'd rather be proactive about getting a new goalkeeper as opposed to the route we took with Handanovic and waiting too long.
Agreed.
Granted, yeah, maybe we could have done something where we loaned someone in, you know, signed someone on a cheap to kind of like for a 1-year deal. I don't know. But I'm definitely happy that we have Martinez. Having seen Di Gregorio, especially what he did against the Parma game, like, I thought that was a soft second goal that he gave up. Very weak to his left, not a strong hand. Confidence is actually, for me, a little bit lower. I was very high on Di Gregorio. My gosh,
I know it's the hardest. I know.
Yeah, like, so I was very high on him, and having seen him now a couple of times, I haven't really been impressed in his two most. I'm sorry, not that I've only seen him a couple, but like his most two, you know, recent times, I haven't really been impressed with what I've seen. So maybe we may have done something smart here by getting Martinez at the price we did. I'm hoping that we'll get to see him here soon. You know, like, yes, in retrospect, I think that we probably should have spent it somewhere else. Now, I'm not going to be ridiculous to say buongiorno, because where was that money coming from? Like, we didn't have
money
to get involved in a bidding war with Napoli as much as I wanted him, and I'm sure other Interisti wanted him. I don't know if we would have gotten for that money. That's the only thing that I'm struggling with, like, thinking of who went and what we could have possibly afforded. You know, maybe a guy like Danso from the Bundesliga, who we were, you know, interested before, but you just don't know. But who knows? Maybe these guys will just turn up and we got steals at that price, you know?
I think if you asked Beppe in a quiet moment in hindsight what he would have done differently with his transfer window, I think the move would have been to take the offer for Aslani from either Fiorentina or whatever the Premier League offer was. I forget who it was, but take that offer.
Was it Nottingham Forest?
Someone. I'm forgetting
Bournemouth?
Who.
Bournemouth. It was Bournemouth.
I think both offers were either 17 in the $17 to $20 million range. I would have taken that, and I would have paid. I would have done whatever to get that Tesman deal done, and that's the one difference I would do to this mercato.
Well, Tesman was
looking good. Good in Lyon.
Let's just say I know some inside information about what happened with Tesman, and that's only because I currently work with the former assistant sporting director at Venezia.
Are we about to drop an exclusive here?
I don't think I have the right to drop it, and I don't want to, but, like, let's just say there's a reason Tesman didn't come. And it wasn't anything that either of the clubs did. That's all I'll say.
That's very interesting. Very intriguing. Yeah. Wow, what a spicy little take there.
Maybe I'll see if I can get permission to share that story.
Okay, that's probably the smart thing, because we are a developing podcast and we would like to continue.
That would be pretty cool if I can get that.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I don't want to. Yeah, but I'll see if I can get permission to share.
All right. Next question at a person 1352. Also, always dropping these questions. Thank you, man. Really appreciate it. He says, how long do you think we have to wait before we see another Italian win the Ballon d'Or?
Wow, that's a great question.
It is a great question, and I think the person that's closest to it is likely Barella, but that would need to be a World Cup and Champions League win in 2026. That is the closest scenario I can see to an Italian winning the Ballon d'Or. What about you?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, and looking at the talent that we have even coming up or even playing right now, like even like the under 21s and under 23 teams, I don't see anyone that's like lighting the world on fire. You know, maybe Camarda from Milan could develop that at some point. I think that's a little bit of pressure to put on him, and I'm not trying to say that he will, but with the way he's looking right now for the Primavera team that they have, that's potentially something there. I think right now, yeah, Barella's the only one that's even remotely close. But I don't even think he's finishing in the top 20 right now, if I'm not mistaken. So it's like,
he didn't. Hakan did, but if it was a World Cup win for Italy and a Champions League victory for Inter, it would be hard to not imagine him on the podium.
Well, Schneider didn't even get in the podium, and he got a World Cup final. He should have won if Arjen Robben wasn't a Muppet. And, I mean, he won a treble. So if that doesn't even get you top three, I don't think even – that might not even be able to work for – like, Barella would have to have a season where he scores double-digit goals, double-digit assists, wins Scudetto, Champions League, and a World Cup, I think, to even get top three.
Yeah.
And yeah, we would have to have some type of ridiculous PR for him. Like, we'd have to like start a train to get that going or something. Like,
yeah,
that's the only way I could see
it. It would need to be like constantly talked about on Paramount and CBS and, you know, whatever it is. But even then, like, it's almost like the ESPN FC-ification of the Ballon d'Or, which has happened. So
that's literally what, yeah.
That's tough. That's tough. All right. Next question at @M6Adam_. Zielinski is showing good performances recently. So when Hakan is back, could we see Zielinski at left center mid instead of Mickey? Or does Inzaghi continue to start his favorite player? So we did talk about this, but do you think it's going to be Zielinski or Mickey moving forward?
Sadly, I think it is going to be Mickey moving forward. I just think he has some kind of faith in him, which... Listen, I get mad at him. I know he's not the worst player we've ever had in midfield. We've had worse. But, like, just his decision-making and his errant passes, they drive me insane. And they're mistakes you can't be making. And you see the shift when Zielinski's on the pitch, just how much better the quality is, how much crisper the passing is, the movement, the dropping of the shoulder and being able to turn a defender. Like, it is just night and day between the two. I don't know how you keep Zielinski on the bench. I just don't get it.
I just had a thought of, like, what is the pay disparity between Zielinski and Mkhitaryan? Because why did you bring in Zielinski, and I'm assuming he's getting paid more than Mickey? Why would you bring him in to be just a backup to Mickey this whole time? I'm trying to, where Couldn't is tell you. That?
No idea.
I got to look it up. I got to look it up, but I will, I'll tweet this out later once I find it. All right. @John_FC66 says, don't know if this is too late, but what was your favorite retro jersey that was just released on the Inter website? I got the 1993 home. I actually haven't seen any of these jerseys.
You haven't seen them
or
yet?
Or looked through the store. I've seen pictures online, but I haven't dove deep into it. What do you got your eyes on?
It's... For me, yeah, I guess I'm gonna have to agree with John there. The 93 one is, it's just, you know, when you see Fiorucci, to me that's like, I don't know. I know how people feel about Pirelli. That's iconic. But for me, like, one of my first memories of watching Inter with my dad were seeing the Fiorucci kids. And I remember my dad had, those are the only kits I've ever seen him own personally. He had,
they're so good. It's so clean.
A Nicola Berti. It's so clean. It's such a pretty, and yes, maybe I am biased. Maybe I am, because it is the inspiration for our podcast logo that is just so perfect to me. I wish they had the away kit that I like most, which I think is the 92-93 one, which is obviously where the background is a very, you know, but that 93 home kit, Fiorucci, I wish they were Umbro branded, like actually authentic ones. Like, they got Umbro to help them out. Because Umbro is owned by Nike anyway, so it's not like you know, you're doing anything. Like, you know, the money's still going to the right place. So, like,
Fiorucci,
I don't think it could have been that hard.
My second favorite sponsor behind Pirelli, just because, like, Pirelli is so iconic and consistent throughout my whole fandom.
Agreed.
But it is super clean. It is super clean. All right. Sean from Alabama. @NerAzzurriPirlo. Yes. Which also, guys, he's a great follow. He's a really great follow for Inter content. Like, just funny football content.
Funny?
Funny football content.
Funny looking, maybe.
And he's back. His Lautaro propaganda, Ballon d'Or propaganda is over. He's back to Pirlo in the Pirlo kit for his PFP.
For the 6 hours says, that he was
given the propaganda machine. We needed some PR from the Inter fans. He says, what are your thoughts on Fratesi and Mickey being in the midfield together? I can't stand it, and I think it's awful. Mickey needs to hold the bench from now on. We've been talking about what to do with Mickey here, but Mickey Fratesi is in particular a very difficult midfield to watch from an us going forward perspective, because it puts the entire build-up or shot creation completely on the left side, DiMarco Bastoni, you know, whoever's playing regista, and you know you're not really getting that from the right side. So it just completely puts the onus to create opportunities on those players, because Mickey can't do it himself. Fratesi can get on the end of that, but he's not doing it. He's not creating it himself. So, yeah, what do you think about those two together?
Yeah, no, I mean, I have to agree with him 100%. Like, I just don't see it ever working I feel like they just don't complement each other in any way, shape, or form. Mickey is kind of a liability with the ball. Fratesi's not great at bringing it up himself. I mean, he's gotten better with his passing. I'll give him that. And I did give him props a few weeks ago about it. Yeah, I think with Hakan hurt, the best midfield, in my opinion, would be Zielinski, Barella, and Fratesi. I think that would be really well. I think that they would complement each other in a lot of ways.
Where do you put Barella?
Barella at Regista. You saw the weaknesses in Zielinski, and Sharma did a really good job breaking it down and kind of highlighting how he was kind of at fault for both goals in the first half against Juve. So
we spoke about it too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm talking about like the recent video that he put out. So
yeah.
Yeah. That's, I think Barella would be more suited there. Now, when Hakan comes back, if you give me Hakan ahead of Gista, Zielinski on the left and Barella on the right, I mean, sky's the limit.
What have we seen it for? Like a total, like the Just Man
City, I think
City,
we saw it
right?
for 18 minutes. But no, yeah, like Just the Man City game was the only time three of them played together. Yeah.
Yep. And he came out after, Zielinski came out either right at halftime or early into,
I think
into
it was
that
really
half,
the second
so.
Half. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. It's definitely something that I want to see more of. I think all the Interisti are trending in that direction. At FC Andre 1908. Couple questions for the pod. Taremi has forced a couple of goals this season with his pressing. Is he more effective for us from the start or as an impact sub? Is he a better foil for Lauti or Thuram? I'll go really quick. I actually was looking up the stat disparity between the three of them to see if at this point Taremi is performing better. And remember when we were talking about in basketball, you get that plus minus. I actually did find football's version of plus minus, and it was basically XG on the field versus XG off the field, or XG against versus off. Taremi on the field, we are much better in terms of expected goals against, much better defensively. With Taremi on the field as far as scoring goals, it's slightly better with Lautaro, especially now that he's got this other goal. Although Taremi was on the field for Lautaro's goal, so I wonder what that did to the numbers, but Lautaro was slightly ahead of him there. So what do you think? More effective from the start or as an impact sub?
I think Taremi's better as an impact sub, in my opinion. That's just me, though. I like what I see when he comes on. I feel like he injects a bit of pace, which is surprising. I didn't really think he had, and I guess I'm comparing it to what Lautaro has in pace, right? So you see a little bit more pace. I think he's better at the link-up play lately, at least. So I'd rather see it, if we're needing a goal and chasing it, to have that capability coming off the bench as opposed to Lautaro. Yep. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't think that Emi should ever start. I mean, when you're out of form, you're out of form. And I would much rather have a guy who's going to offer me something rather than someone who's not going to offer me anything. So, again, I would defer to whatever Inzaghi thinks, and hopefully he, gets a feel for it and recognizes it in training if someone is looking good going into it, and, he would just make the right choice there.
Yeah, I have trouble seeing Lautaro as a substitute, but he did score. Didn't he score those four goals against Salernitana coming on at halftime? So maybe his stats maybe his stats say that he's really good off the bench, but I don't see that. And then Andre also asked one more. He says, does Barella suffer from being good at every midfield role? Feels like he has moved around too much to fill whatever gap is there.
Suffer from being good at every midfield role, or is he like kind of like, because I don't think that's suffering. I think that's an asset.
I think he's,
I do think it takes away from his over, like, being, if he's saying his game suffers from being forced to like move around so much, and I don't know, man. We saw what the impact he had at Empoli, right? That was an incredible performance, and if I'm not mistaken, Sean from Alabama actually shared the stats from it too, which were incredible to see. Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't say he suffers from it. I just think it. The guy's an asset, and he's just able to fill roles when needed, and you don't see any drop off. The only time I actually see a drop off is when he's forced to go to the left. I think that's where there's a little bit
of a dip.
When he has to go to the left is when it's like, that's what bothers me, I guess, when Fratesi's on the pitch with him. Like when they're, you know, it just drives me a little crazy because it's almost like he kind of loses interest and doesn't have the same impact. It's different when you're like in the moment, you know, shifting to the left and then drop back to your original position. But like when he's forced to just continually stay there, that's when there's a little bit of a dip. So
I agree. All right. Last one. This is a voicemail. It's audio by Anonymous. I did listen to it. I forget exactly what he said, so I know it's not going to be anything crazy, but here we go. Let me know if you can hear this. Okay, done.
Oh, shit. Whoops, accidentally turn that off.
Hey, fellas. Just leaving work here. Awesome day if you had any didisti. We get 3 points off of a very stingy Empoli. And then Juve dropped a couple of points, which is pretty big. So we are firmly locked into second place going into the weekend. I was excited about Palacios' debut and also Fratesi's brace. Good to see Lautaro getting on the score sheet as well. A quick thought, Barella just looks so much better at Regista than Zielinski. I hope that we start him at Regista again if Hakan and Aslani are not ready to go. Yeah, looking good. Forza Inter.
Forza Inter, thank you for the voice note. You know, Aslani's position with Interisti is already so on the rocks, but did you see the Samuele Ricci report?
I did, and I love it. I'm here for it. Swap him out. Throw some cash on it. Bring me Samuele Ricci. I am so ready for it. No offense to any Albanian listeners who are big Aslani supporters. I'm not trying to offend you. I just don't think he's good enough for Inter. I really don't. It has nothing to do with nationality. It has to do with what I see from his performances, and I have not been convinced. I was hopeful when we got him. I was super excited when we signed him. I thought that, like, hey, here's a guy who I think has loads of potential. It just doesn't feel like it's developing, and maybe he is better as a mezzala, and he'll be able to catch on somewhere else, but I don't think it's really going to be at Inter, and I am 1,000% on board for Samuele Ricci, and I hope and pray. Listen, the only two things I want this summer, I know you want a right wing back. I know you do.
Yeah.
But give me a center back who is ready made and give me Samuele Ricci and we cook.
Would you take another season of Dumfries Darmian if it meant that you were getting Ricci?
100%.
I think I might 100%. Too,
I want Italian players at Inter. And if you have quality players that you can bring in, I want it.
Dude, imagine Ricci, Barella, Fratesi.
And that could be your midfield for the Italian national team.
Tonali would have something to say about that, but Ricci is
100%.
Yeah, Ricci is the best possible Hakan replacement. He is the player whose game is closest to what can develop into what Hakan is today. He is. And I've been saying this whole time, like, I don't get excited because I don't think it's possible. That report, you know, reports are reports, but, you know, it's apparently they're enamored and in love with him. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. We should be in love with him because he's the kind of player that you move mountains for.
I will say Gianluca Longari is usually ahead of everybody else. Like, he's one of the guys that when he reports it, there's real truth behind it. You know, like, Di Marzio will give you, you know, flippy floppy, you don't get consistent things. Bedulla is off the rails sometimes, like you don't know what's going on with him. And you know, Simone Fregna, I don't know what's happened to him. I mean, he's unfortunately been missing for a little bit.
What does he think?
I don't know. I want to see if he can, you know, we can get some news from him hopefully here soon. But you know, and Shira is, I feel like he misses more often than not lately. What do you think?
Oh, man. I mean, I'm a Skida guy, but I don't know what his accuracy rate's been. They've all had a tough summer, I think.
But Longari was the most solid. Accurate.
For Inter, he was
yeah.
Pretty so accurate. Like,
if he's talking about this, I'm feeling good. That's all.
Listen, Oaktree should have some money, you know, coming off the books here with some of the older players. And, you know, we do have buyout clauses on Darmian, Miki, and Acerbi, even though they've extended their contracts. And it's not an onerous buyout clause. So let's see what works. Hopefully we can move some stuff around and make it happen. All right, Johnny and I came into this podcast saying we were going to do like 35, 40 minutes. Game wasn't super eventful. And, you know, frankly, on a personal note, we're fucking exhausted. We work full-time jobs and there's a lot going on. So that's why things are a little late today. And then we get on the mic and we end up giving you guys an hour. So hope you guys enjoy the pod. Always enjoy the questions as well. Like, keep those coming.
Yeah.
It's fun to get into the mind a little bit.
For sure. And yeah, like Alessandro said, you know, yeah, we're exhausted. Like, now I wasn't working before, like, full transparency. Like, I had no job for the last like year. So this was easy for me. This was my job essentially. Now it's like and now that I'm in the Pacific time zone, it's like I rush home. Like, Alessandro wants to watch Sunday night football. I just get home because I'm 3 hours behind, and it's like he's tired. I'm just like, I don't even get a chance to relax, and we're doing this. But I love being able to do this with you guys and share and answer questions and have our thoughts. And obviously we're doing it as fans, so like, it is a bit different for us for sure. And with now, you know, my job working, you know, in American soccer, it's, you know, it's exciting times for sure. I think I'm going to do, and again, people, let me know if you're interested, but I have a jersey from our new club, Las Vegas Lights FC. I might do it as a giveaway if you guys are interested. When you listen to this episode, if you like it, or if you think that'd be cool to do it as a giveaway, I'll be more than happy to do a jersey giveaway. It won't be obviously an Inter one, but it will be a blank Las Vegas Lights one.
Yeah.
A little something.
Who's
just
turn down,
you know. And it's a sick kit, jerseys, in my opinion. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I'll throw my name in there. See if I can steal that off you. No, I'm just kidding. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. And we will see you for the post-match against Venezia. In the words of the great Roberto Scarpini, Forza ragazzi, Forza ragazzi, Forza ragazzi.